If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blah Blah Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grime America Show, coming at you from Tercera Island. I'm in Angra, I guess. Angra de Hiroshima or something like that. The weather's been good. It's pouring right now, I think.
Is it Tercera or Tercera?
Tercera.
Okay, Tercera. It looks really cool. I mean, the pics, man, the pics you guys have been sharing, holy, it looks amazing.
Oh, it's pretty wild, for sure. It's pretty wild. It's,
I mean, the sunsets, the moon, the scenery, but then also like the pics of some of the stone and the cart ruts. And I mean, I've been sort of following along here because I'm still in the prairies. I didn't go. It snowed a little bit, but it's not too bad. It hasn't really like. It hunkered, like it snowed a little bit, but it hasn't really gotten really bad yet.
I think it was like plus 15 at my place today.
Wow, that's crazy.
So it snowed and then it all melted. So it looks like I should get to do a bit of duck hunting when I get back. I've seen some ducks here.
So everybody's having a good time though? Like looks like there's some legit mysteries there, kind of.
Seems like there's some legit mysteries. We're going to have Chuck on, the geologist, to talk about some of the stuff he found out here when we get back, about how some of the lava flows don't look right.
Wow.
Then I met a couple other dudes, a guy from Italy and a guy from Portugal. I picked him up at the airport and been chatting with them. So making a lot of cool European connections with some researchers over here.
That's
guys
great.
That are researching Atlantis and stuff like that.
Wow. So,
yeah.
Cause is there some, like, call me crazy, but some of those rock pictures, like some of those like really, really worn out rocks, like, is there a chance that those are really, really, really old and they're just super eroded?
Could be. It could be, but what it seems like happened, I mean, I think that if you're going to find artifacts here, it's going to be tricky because it seems like it like got hauled down into the ocean when it collapsed. And there's a chance that these, like, I don't know if the peaks were stayed above the water or if they what happened there. But it seems like, because all these, there's a bunch of calderas, which means there's been explosive volcanoes. So I don't know, man. It seems like whatever happened here would have been such a fucking crazy mess.
There's not a lot left over.
That it would have been hard to.
Yeah.
But they're finding there's beaches 3 miles under the ocean here that have only been formed in shallow seas.
But I guess what I'm getting at is because we're in a different location, like you're in a more of a rainy, like it's a moist, verdant.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like a rainforest. I mean, just to ever see anything, it's like the trees have taken over everything. There was some cool cisterns around that seemed that the Portuguese say they didn't build.
Oh, yeah. So that's kind of what I'm getting at. And the difference between that and the Middle East is like there's not as much rain in some of those other areas where the granite, like the old stone or granite works might not be quite as eroded if it's not being rained on for thousands of years.
Yeah, even if it was inundated with water too, it just seems like I think any of the mega structures that would be here that might have even survived if they're in, so, you know, if there's pyramids or anything, they'd be under the water.
What's the cart rut theory? Like, what's that?
I've seen the cart ruts. We did see the cart ruts.
Just today, right, I think?
Yesterday. They seen some other ones today. I didn't see the cart ruts today.
Okay. Well, what's the theory? Like, what's the mainstream explanation for those?
I don't think there is one.
They just ignore it. It's just another thing they just ignore.
I mean, someone's been launching boats, it looks like, at those cart routes we seen yesterday for a long, long time. Could you do that in 400 years? The interesting thing about it is there's a fucking boat launch.
What do you mean launching boats? Like, you think
the cart routes we seen yesterday were going into the ocean, kind of. And there's a boat launch, like, right around the corner from it. So it's like, was the, and the weird, the boat launches here have like a little electric motor that you pull the, that pulls the boat out of the water back and forth. So it's like, was there just some sort of weird, where they pulled, you know, was a horse there? Did they have some other way of pulling the boats out of the water? Cause it's all that volcanic rock. You might be able to make the ruts quicker than you think. You know, the Portuguese have been here for 400 years.
Yeah, but they're all over the world. It's a mystery that's all over the world as well. That is
true. The other thing is there's cart ruts in Wyoming from the Bozeman Trail that were made in, you know, the wilding or the settling of America. So we were able to make those cart ruts
in
since 1776. Yeah, I'm pretty sure now. I mean, you could ask your assistant to check it out, but I'm pretty sure the cart ruts in Wyoming and Bozeman were into stone. And the interesting thing is they're not far from Yellowstone, so it could be the same sort of rock that we're dealing with here. But it does seem like, so the geologists are talking about how these Pacific island volcanoes, there's usually no reason for them, especially at a triple plate junction where the Azores is. There's no reason that there should be calderas. There should have never been any way for the magma to build up enough pressure to have explosive force out. You don't find calderas, I guess, in Hawaii or Iceland.
Wow, interesting.
But there is a caldera on Easter Island.
Yeah, they're soft sandstone, it says, specifically soft sandstone. The most notable examples are near Guernsey, where the Oregon Trail was forced away from the North Platte River and crossed a sandstone ridge.
So ask how that stone compares to volcanic stone.
Yeah.
We found a bunch of, what's this, obsidian today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no big pieces, but a bunch of small pieces.
Anything carved? Like, no way. They're not like weapons, just arrowheads or anything like that, just pieces?
No, from the volcanoes. There was an earthquake here the day before we got here.
Really?
A 4.1, yeah, but we missed it. The driving is kind of bonkers. Driving standard cars up like 45 degree hills. And I had to stop on the one hill yesterday and I couldn't get it going. Dude, I was like, I had to rock the clutch to get up the hill because every time I put it into gear, it just starts spinning the fucking tires. So I'm like spinning my tires going down the hill backwards. And all you could smell is burnt rubber. It's a good thing I got the insurance.
Yep.
But it's been good. Great group.
Yeah. Yeah, how's Randall? Do you guys doing some presentations and stuff too? Or how's the...
Yeah, he did a presentation the last few mornings in a row. I don't know if he's planning to do one again tomorrow or not. I think all the other people are starting a presentation with the photographer now. But I'm not a photographer, so...
What time is it there now?
It's 7:20.
Oh, you're only 5 hours ahead of me because I moved. I didn't move back. So
yeah, I'm 6 hours ahead of home and probably five ahead of you.
Oh, I thought it was worse than that.
It's not bad.
But dude, it looks like the scenery is unbelievable. The green hills and the coastal and the rocky, like the rocky shore and the sandy beaches even. I mean, it's all just... Oh, man.
It's pretty unreal. It's going to be interesting to go from here to Easter Island in just a few months and compare the two.
Yeah.
And in Easter Island, we'll see the southern stars, too.
And it's weird that, really? Oh, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
And it's weird that you mentioned the caldera is in Easter Island as well. So there could be, because if you look at like the legends of Mu and where Easter Island is compared to
Lemuria. When I was talking to Rob Reinhardt about it, he figures Lemuria.
Yeah.
But those would be the sort of two points on the planet that could have sunk.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It is interesting that the caldera is in both of those places, and you know, those are the ones that seem to have remnants of a past civilization on peaks of mountains only. Whereas Hawaii doesn't quite seem the same in that regard.
Yeah, Rob thinks it's Lemuria. Rob Reinhardt, which is another guy we'll have to have on the show right away.
Mm-hmm.
Me and him have been getting to know each other a lot better, so that's been great. He's actually going to come to Easter Island.
Oh, sweet. Good. I was going to ask you.
It's been great chatting him about stuff. He's way more out there than I thought he was.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, buddy.
I know when I first met him at the Cosmic Summit, we were talking about books and all this stuff. But then once I got to know him a little bit too, I'm like, wow. Like, yeah, he can definitely keep up to us as far as the strangeness goes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that's been great. The crew's been great. We do need people to support the show. grandamerica.ca/support. I don't think we had any new people to mention this week, unless I missed one. But I don't think so. So we could use some new supporters over there. And like, there's about a half dozen people here that are strongly considering that Easter Island trip that would just about put us maxed out. So if that's something you're thinking about, you might want to get in on that soon. We're down to one private room, I think, for the Solstice Festival, one private room, and then a bunch of camping and some other options, but only one private room left for that. So that's another thing people might want to check out. Got Lake Chelan, and then we're talking to Randall today about doing the New York next fall, Finger Lakes and all that. And he wants to do some sacred geometry stuff, workshops that are just sort of like not out in the field so much, where we go to maybe a nicer hotel and do mostly classroom stuff, but someplace where you can go away for a couple hours and do a hike or see a waterfall. And then go back to class for a couple hours.
Yeah, great idea. Yeah, yeah.
And looks like really gearing up for a Grail tour. He really wants to do the Cathedral Grail tour, and there's a ton of people here that are interested in getting on board with that. So could be exciting few years. And it's great because our business partner Mike got to come along, and he's having a great time too. We crammed him in with Oliver, so
that's awesome.
So yeah, good times. Support
you guys are having a good time, yeah.
Enjoy the episode. This is the hunting recap show, of course, with Lord Tony and Lord Johnny talking about their hunting trip in Alberta, which is another one people are interested in. They can let us know and they can maybe get in on some hunting.
That's not posted anywhere, so just email us.
There's nothing for sale right now, but if it's something you want to get on the waiting list for or something like that, shoot us an email. Other than that, enjoy the chat. Okay, guys, welcome back to the Graham Merck Show. Happy Halloween, I guess. It is Halloween. Graham dressed up as a hockey player, I guess. Nobody else bothered to dress up. For the UK, he's wearing his UK jersey. The dude plays one game of hockey, and he's like Mr. Hockey again. We got a special episode, Halloween episode, and we got a couple of lords, Lord of the Ducks and Lord of the Goose, Lord Goose.
at Hammered with a Goose, and they're coming on the show because they were both over here in Alberta cruising around for 10 days. I think we got out 9 of them hunting, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was 9 days straight of hunting, maybe 10, could have been 10.
Definitely 10, definitely 10.
Yeah. Oh, you did something every day, like?
Yeah, because we went the last morning, right? The morning of your flights.
We hunted on the day we flew out, yes.
Yeah, so we figured we'd do a wrap-up episode of that because we were kind of touching on it in some intros, but it's hard, and everyone hears my hunting stories all the time, so it might be interesting to just hear. I mean, Tony's been out here a few times now doing it. Johnny has too, right? Johnny's second time, yeah. A lot more involved this time, and Graham was even out for a few days, so he got to experience some of it for his first time. So I think the interesting way to go with it would be all of your guys' sort of different takes. You're all at sort of different places along the journey. You know, Graham's not going to hunt, so he says, eventually I think he might end up shooting some ducks. We'll see.
But, I mean, if the end comes, I'll definitely pull the trigger when it comes time, but
it's a skill you might want to have at least, right? You shoot some skeets so you're all warmed up.
You guys enough. I can do it.
There was certain amount of bloodthirst with Graham, wasn't there? He was getting excited about the kills. I don't think it'll be long.
Can I try one? That's what it'll start with, just one shot, two shots, and then once he downs a duck, that's it. He's
hooked. I was filming you guys for a couple days there, and it was hard because I was trying to catch it, because otherwise I got to just sit there the whole time. Like, we didn't have a tripod or anything, so I was trying to catch to be filming while you guys shot some stuff, right? But of course it was hard because you can't just wait, right? So I got to wait for some commotion and then start it and try and catch the.
And it happens pretty quickly.
It happens real quick. Yeah, that's the problem. But I think I got some good stuff, but there's definitely a lot of good pictures and some B-roll video. And I think that one where you guys got like a whole bunch at once, I think I got some of that.
The tail end of it. You got just sort of the tail end of that one. So yeah, we're going to do this show. It's going to be fun. Of course, we might have some people watching live, a few people watching live. I think the Blue Jays are playing for the World Series tonight, so they'll probably have some stiff competition on the Canadian front. Everyone's fucking wrapped up in that around here, as near as I can tell, and in my Facebook feed. And you know, it's weird how quick people can just get wrapped up in something. But support the show. GrimAmerica.ca/support. We do need support from the people to keep the show going, so that'd be good. And I don't know, I guess to start it off, what was it like getting home, settling back in? You guys had 10 days here, like pretty wild, pretty rural. No, we didn't even really go into town, so it must have been weird. Because you would have flown into Toronto, Johnny. Did you go to Toronto?
I flew into Hamilton, actually, which is pretty close to where I live in St. Catharines, Niagara. So that was pretty sweet, except that they didn't lose one of my luggage. One of my bags got held back in Alberta for some reason, but I managed to get it, and everything kind of worked out in one way or another. So pretty good. But yeah, it was a lot of 10 days of hunting. Me and Tony have been talking to each other a little bit about the last couple of weeks is how, like, what we've been going through. And it's like, kind of got fucked up a little bit. Like, that was a lot. Like, that was a lot to do. And we did a lot. And it was amazing. Like, really amazing. But, yeah, we made it home.
What was it like getting into Heathrow after?
We had 2, 3, 4 days where I saw 2 people all day, you and you. And then you get back to Heathrow, and my God, it just feels so jammed up. So many people all of a sudden, because we were going days and just literally not seeing anybody outside the hunting party. And it's the third time I've done it now, but I don't know, being out there for 10 days straight, we spent a lot of time out on them plains, and it did come as a shock, the amount of people, how tight everything is over here. I don't think that will ever change. You know, it won't be the last time I come out and hunt with you. And I think it's always going to be quite a big transition coming back here from the landscape, just how busy it is here.
and how open and free it is out on the plains. Yeah, so yeah, big transition. But also, you know, from being sort of revved up, because we were full on, weren't we, every single day. I mean, we were doing about, what, four and a half hours sleep a night, getting up early, working till late, just full on. Just wasn't a last minute. And I think coming back, I was at work the next day, and so it was all very quick. It was a bit of a whirlwind. It took me two and a half weeks to get up, to feel right again. It really did take some recovery in this time. I've been exhausted first few weeks back.
How about you, Johnny? Same thing, exhausted?
Yeah, we've been pretty much paralleled the whole time. He had a much longer trip, and I can't imagine the jet lag going back that way, because we're talking like seven plus hours. But and it's funny how he says going back to Heathrow is so many people, because I went back to Hamilton. There's literally nobody working in the entire airport except for some East Indian dude at Tim Hortons. And I had to go to him and say, is there anybody working at this airport? Because I'm missing one of my bags. Literally nobody was anywhere. I was just banging on doors. So I was the opposite of Tony. I came home to less people than two, just one guy. But I ended up finding a couple girls that worked on the tarmac. But yeah, anyways, you kind of train for this stuff a little bit, not train, but you try to like do the best you can and get out there and make the best of it. And I had the best time while I was out there. And Tony was climbing mountains, and I was inside just on the treadmill, so I didn't know how that would work out. But we managed to get through everything and have a great time. But, yeah, a little rebound. Like, it was just kind of getting back into the swing of things. It's taken a couple of weeks because we did a lot. We did a lot. And I was just totally impressed, and I had the greatest time. I got a lot of pictures, and, yeah, I can't wait to get back there. Get back there again.
Was 10 days too much, then, you think? Is 10 days?
No, it's not enough.
Not enough.
I could do another 10 days tomorrow. I fully embrace hunting. It's like, you know, after 3 years now, just given me a completely new aspect in my life. I fucking love being out there. I love it. It's fantastic. I don't know. It's like something I've never had before, and I've just wholeheartedly embrace it. It's become another part of my life. It's great.
I went hunting the next day after you guys left.
Yeah, I thought you might.
With the wife, we went and tried out. But and I've been hunting a lot since you guys left, for sure. Goose hunting, and I might yet go out for a couple hours tomorrow morning. We'll see, just in case. Just in case. Winter sets in. Well, because I got to fly out. I got like 9 or 10 hours of flying on Sunday. I got to fly. I think it's 4 hours to Toronto, and then another 5 hours and 45 minutes to San Miguel. So I'm like, God damn, man, that's farther than the UK. That's like approaching Egypt territory. That is a long. There's a good long break in the middle that'll help. I think I got like 6 hours farting around the Toronto airport. I haven't decided if that's a blessing or a curse. Yeah, it's nice to stretch out the legs and poke around a little bit and break it up. But in other ways, it's just nice to just fucking hammer it out.
Mate, you'll be pulling your hair out after an hour. You'll be ready to go. You only need to stretch your legs.
That's probably going to be the case. But you got to be careful, because I could only fly with SATA Airlines from Toronto to the Azores, but I can't fly with SATA from here to Toronto. So those like flights aren't connected. So you're going to have to like fully disembark, get your bags and go and fucking do it all again. So you got to leave yourself a bunch of time in there just in case shit gets fucked up. And then on the way home, I just had to stay overnight because I was like, man, customs could be a total shit show. And I already don't get into like 7 p.m. Every flight I looked at, I was like, that's too tight.
Yeah, you might be ready for an overnight by the time you're coming back after being away that long. I think that will be a blessing on the way back.
Yeah, probably. So 10 days is not enough. So next time we'll just do a solid fucking 2 weeks.
Maybe 2 weeks, 14 days.
I'm already thinking about next year. We need a moose next year.
That's what I was going to ask is, would you like, is there any way that you would, like, how was the hill, the foothill hunt that I, cause I was only there for when we were in the plains doing the duck hunting for a couple of days. And then afterwards, like, how was that? And would you get a tag to shoot something yourself next time or?
Yeah, I would. I definitely, it's something I'd like to work towards. I'd like to work towards it properly. So yeah, getting a tag. I need to spend more time with a rifle. I need to get more proficient with a rifle before that's even on the agenda. But you know, like being the third year, I've done so many different types of hunts now, and it makes me reflect back on year number one. I mean, I knew it was special year number one with the elk hunt. I knew the elk were special. And I've done another 2 years now and I've not seen another elk. Not that we've been out looking for them, but I haven't seen another one. And it kind of, there's just all these layers that keep getting added on and on and on. It's like, Graham, when we were with Miles, when he shot the mule deer, that the kind of stop, spot hunting rather than stalk hunting, just completely different, completely different experience, absolutely amazing. And I just keep getting all these different types of experiences doing essentially the same thing, hunting. So the foothill hunt, I mean, what, the first day we must have walked 12K, didn't see anything other than whitetails a long way off, and we weren't out for whitetails. So, you know, unsuccessful day maybe, but it was a beautiful spot. And you walk, you're still hunting, you still got your guns, you're still out there hunting. The second day when we stalked the moose, I mean, that was just, okay, we didn't get a shot off. It wasn't right to get a shot off. But the whole process of kind of stalking, creeping up on that moose, you couldn't see it. We were so close. We got within, what do you reckon, about 20 meters? It must have been about 20, 25 meters of the moose. And you know it's in the brush, but you can't see it. The brush is too thick. And it was just so goddamn exciting knowing that animal's there, knowing that any minute that shot might be taken, might not be taken. And I was the one to spot it first. I was looking through the brush and being that close to an animal so big, and it was bedded down and it stood up, and it was just such a huge, huge animal. And then the next second, another one stood up next to it. It was just like unbelievable. And yeah, we didn't get the animal. We didn't take the shot, but it's just a hell of an experience. Just a great experience to get that close. But yeah, we need a moose next year, Darren. That's got to be on the agenda. I'm hooked. I want a moose.
Yeah, just to add something to that story from another perspective, I was also excited to stalk that moose, but I laid back, kind of hung back a little bit because you guys were up front and getting close to something, which we didn't know what it was. But then you guys moved ahead a little bit, and I was kind of back in the woods, realizing that there's two grizzly bears in the area. And I just kind of looked around and thought, oh, I might be fucked. But everything worked out great, and I had a great time. I never saw the moose, by the way, so I need to see a moose next time. I would have been proper fucked.
And we thought you were hanging back looking after the bags.
Yeah. Now I was just lost.
It's hard to get lost, number. So as long as the sun's out. When it's dark, you can get fucking lost pretty easily. It's dark and cloudy, and you can't. I mean, we almost lost the truck with them one night. Was that with you guys?
Yeah.
When we parked it, and it's like you start going in the wrong. You just get turned around enough that you got no idea where the fucking truck's at.
And that should have been so easy because it was up against that fence line, and we still ended up, what, 200 yards away, 300 yards, I don't know. It's, yeah. It's
just on the range where if you missed it by another 100 or 200 yards, the lights wouldn't have caught it. You would have missed it completely.
Well, what can we get into the details on the moose thing a little bit? So what happened? You spotted a couple moose stand up, and then what did you guys do? Then you it was too far away to shoot, so then you kind of had to try and follow it, or?
Well, it was bedded. We saw it from the top of a really big hill. Darren spotted it, and we weren't too sure if it was a moose or a bear. we recognized it was fir, something was bedded down, and from the top of the hill, from our vantage, we could see into a break in the brush, a little clearing. So he's like, let's get closer. Let's figure out what it is. Let's figure out whether it's something we can shoot. So we kind of went down the hill, kept glassing, kept looking through the binos, and just Darren saw it lifted its head, so we knew it was a moose. So we went in. We went in to, you know, that's what we were out for that day. So we went in to see if we could take the shot. But as we got to the bottom of the hill, obviously now we're on a ground level with all the brush, and it was pretty thick when we got down there. So it was just a case of like really slowly and silently trying to get through this brush to a point where we got a break in the brush and we could probably take a shot. It turned out it was too thick, but, you know, like I say, we've got probably 20 meters. I think we found out a little. Darren went left, I went right slightly, and that's when I caught a glimpse of it and then saw the second one, which we're figuring must have been a calf, but it was a damn big calf because it didn't look a whole lot different size to the cow when I saw it stand up just a second or two after the cow. And then, damn me, the things just glided out of there silently. They went the other way from us, and they moved pretty quick. So we tried to run around, tried to see if we could see them, but they just vanished. And then again, the next half hour, 40 minutes, maybe even an hour, we tried to look for them, but I think they just booked it out of there, gone too far. But they, you know, it'll make it even sweeter for me when we do get one. You know, it'll just make it sweeter. It's kind of like I shot my first Canadian goose this year, and last year I had the best shot on a Canadian that I think I would ever have in my life. But I'd reloaded too quickly, and I'd done something wrong with the gun. It was completely my fault. So it was a misfire. And, you know, that's damn haunted me for a year that I didn't get that Canadian last year. So when I got one this year, it's just so fucking exciting. It was just so good. Yeah, and there's a little bit of a story to shooting that Canadian as well, isn't there, Johnny?
Nobody was surprised more than me.
So,
and that Canadian goose.
Who wants to go with that one?
Well, did you end up, how was your head?
Yeah, my head was fine. It was
no damage.
Yeah, a little bit. I do actually have a little bit of a strain in my back right now, but yeah, like Graham says, and Graham did a great job of filming. I can't believe how much like great film he got, because you're just walking around, nothing's happening, right? And you're just like waiting, and all of a sudden something happens, and Graham did a great job the whole time, especially in the coolies. But back in, I guess you missed this one, Graham, because you went to the back just for a second, and there was a bunch of birds, and then next thing Darren says, like, heads up, and I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, I could see what was going on, so you're looking up, and you're not expecting, like, to, you know, you're expecting to see something up there. So I look up, and so it's about, I don't know, 12, 20, 25 meters, or maybe 12 to 25 feet, probably, pretty close. So I look up, and there's a Canadian goose looking back at me, and I feel like we have the same, like, experience, like... We're like, what the fuck is happening right now? So you looked into my eyes, I looked into his. I'm assuming it's a him, not trying to gender, not. So he was kind of spinning around a little bit. So I could see it, but it was coming down, but it was kind of doing a spin. So I didn't really know what's like, I could see what was happening. He was traveling terminal velocity at me, and I just kind of at the last second just kind of like lunged forward a little bit, which was such a lame move. Like, I could have slipped, like, it would have been cool. I could have caught it. Like, I don't know. I could have just got out of the way, but I just kind of went forward and it hit me in the back of the neck And I was just like, oh God, like, this is going to be weird, right? It's like a bowling ball wrapped in a pillow.
Did it hurt?
Well, I was pretty like fired up with adrenaline, so it didn't hurt, but I was like, oh, that was a bit of an impact. So it hit my back. And then Darren, I made a noise a little bit. So Darren can take the story from here a little bit.
You made a whimper.
Well, you know, I wouldn't say that. I would say it was more of a manly.
I thought you were just trolling us for a minute because we
And then I fell on the. I didn't fall. I walked away and I was like, okay, I just got hit with a goose. And then the goose was in the back. And then, yeah, something else happened.
So the story from our hide, because we were in two hides. Johnny and Miles were in the left-hand hide. Me and Darren were in the right-hand hide, facing the water. And like I say, I've had a year of disappointment of missing last year's Canada. So when I shot it, I was excited. And I screamed out like a little boy, I've got one, I got it. And the next thing, this thing's flying down. Darren shouts, heads up. And we hear the thud of the goose. And there was definitely, it was a bit more than a whimper, Johnny. It was kind of a thud.
We're going to go with that.
Yeah.
A bit more than a whimper.
Yeah. But there's another layer of funny on this story. Because if you go back just 40 minutes previously, me and Darren are actually in the left-hand hide.
All right. Yeah. Now
we're going to bring this up again, are we?
We're shooting all the birds, and Johnny and Miles were getting none. And Miles complained that he'd got a terrible hide and we needed to swap. So we swapped hides. I will add, we carried on our shooting then, boys. But you just think about it, the trajectory, the timing, the shot, everything, it would not have happened if you hadn't swapped hides.
I never thought about that, but you are
correct. Yeah, no, I thought about it.
Technically, they didn't want to swap hides. They just started invading our hide. They were like, we're coming in your hide now. And we were like, hey, man, there's not room for four people here. We'll just go over here. And then when Tony and I go over there, we're just like, are you thinking? Tony's like, you thinking what I'm thinking? And I'm like, yeah, I was like, it's going to be damn funny when we just keep blasting these birds, which, you know.
It wasn't that funny. It was just more disappointing, actually.
let's show a shot of, like, looking out from a hide here. This is what it would look like. Pretty beautiful, right?
Yeah.
Look at that. That's where you guys were talking about. I think that's the right hide right there.
That's my profile pic for a little while.
Whoops, I shouldn't. But I wanted to see if I could actually pass the these. So there's a couple shots here.
They're unbelievable.
I'm trying to skip past the ones with the gun, but there's another one there of you guys getting all set up.
Skip past. Don't let them see the guns, Graham. They'll freak out. I'm telling you, they'll shut the stream down.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to find another one. You know what I want? Can we tell the story about... Miles and about how that whole thing came about, because that to me was pretty mind-blowing too.
Yeah, that was a good idea.
Well, I mean, I was sort of just walking around through movies for most of that, so it'd probably be more exciting for Graham or Tony to tell that story, because Johnny and I were just on the bum rush.
I'll tell it, because here's like what the coolies look like, right? So this is actually where Miles picked that one off. So let me see if I can get a couple other pictures of the coolie. You know what? I don't want to show too many with the guns and stuff. Most of them have guns. But anyways, you can imagine what the. Oh, actually, let's go to this one. There's some pretty nice pics here, but I just have to stop sharing and change because I don't want to show the ones with guns. But you know what it's like walking around coolies, right? It's so weird that. You think that you're just going to go, you know, there's over the edge. There's a, you know, you're getting through the other one and then you're in another one. And it's really, there's some pretty interesting. So that's kind of what it looks like in some of the areas, but these are all full of coolies there. Anyways, we decided to split up. Cause I think you guys saw some deer, right? You saw a buck. We were looking for buck specifically, right? So you guys saw a buck and we split up. So Tony and I and Miles went one way and Darren and Johnny went the other way. And you guys were going to flush them out. Right. And Paul was there too. Right. You guys went that way and you're going to kind of go down to the end and then come back.
Paul barely fucking made that shit, man. I thought Paul might fucking die. Shout out to Lord Paul. Sorry, buddy. I'm not trying to embarrass you, but he like after I swear when we were on the way back and he saw us come up to that fucking coolie room again, I swear I seen him just fucking die inside a little bit. Because it's just a massive coulee. Like the biggest one out there, it's like fucking down probably, you know, 150 feet and back up 150 feet, but at like a 70 degree angle sometimes.
So I can't show that either then.
Whoa. Oh, you might have got us. You might
no.
have. No. This flashes. We're going to, because it would. Yeah. This is risky. I wonder if it knows it's a screen share.
Hey, Johnny.
Yeah. Back. So Miles is saying, like, because we were supposed to go across the ridge and just wait there. And hopefully the buck would come back. And so Miles is just like, just don't move. And it won't matter, like, that we're actually like just lumps on this ridge, like overlooking. So we were kind of overlooking. You can see my thing, right? We were overlooking like this area down here. This is actually right where Miles shot the thing right here. So I've got like two cameras. Hey,
wait, just a sec. Is your pointer always this big?
It is. Yeah, it is. I need a big pointer because I'm using it all day.
I know what I'm going to get you for Christmas. Some of those like playing cards that are like 12 inches.
My pointer is this big. So we're just sitting there on the hill waiting, right? And I've got two cameras there. And we see one of the bucks come over the hill like quite a ways away, right? Like it'd be a few hundred yards.
It was on that far ridge. On that far ridge in the photo.
Actually, it was on the left. It was kind of over here because this is where he shot it right there, right? And then you saw another one come down, and I only saw the first one. So you were like, you saw one go, no, one disappeared. They both kind of disappeared, but then they're coming up over the hill. So we're just waiting for it to come up. And sure enough, the thing comes up the hill. And then a coyote runs ahead of it, a big coyote. Like I thought it was a wolf because it had red in it and everything.
Dude, I got so close to that coyote. So like minutes before that, Johnny and I were like 2 miles away from you guys. And it's worth mentioning who told you guys to go sit on the ridge there.
This was all Darren's plan. Yeah, he's got the intuition and he's got the planning here. So,
we were walking across the tops of the coulees, trying not to have to go down in them because we wanted to go right down to the far west end and then push in and come around. And I just like stopped, but I was wearing I was fully camoed out. You don't have to wear orange in Alberta, so you're just fully fucking camoed out, head to toe. And so I just stopped because I'm at the top of this coulee. And I thought it might have been a little deer at first because it was a big fucking coyote, like Grab said. But that thing came running up the coulee to me and I just stopped and waited. And that thing probably got like 10 yards from me before he figured out. I might even, because I moved a little bit, because it was like, all right, this is starting to get weird. So I just kind of like did a little move and then he like noticed me right away and went fucking high-tailing it down into them coulee. And then Graham picked him up from there.
Right here. He came up here and ran over this ridge here. And we were right up where I'm taking the picture from right here. So we saw this big coyote and I thought, you know what? This is perfect. Cause the buck was worried about the coyote. I think he was worried about that. Cause he then appeared walking down the hill over here and then up this hill. And then he disappeared about this hump there, but we could tell he was coming this way. And then he just walked right over here. And then I had the camera and I was like, do I videotape the thing or Miles? So I turned to Miles and just had it like right on Miles and Miles shot him right here. And then the thing ran down to the bottom. And then I think there's a couple of pics here of there they are down at the bottom of the coulee, but these coulees go on for miles and miles and miles. Pardon the pun.
Miles. Yeah, Graham, you really got all those shots. You did an amazing job. Because we weren't even there, so we came up later, but later on, seeing the video was unbelievable.
Oh yeah, you guys saw that, the video. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, here's some shots of the sunrise where you're sitting in the blinds and stuff, and the pretty.
We were duck hunting that night. Duck hunting that morning. Go out, shoot a deer, drag it back, break it down. And then went and hammered all those mallards. That's when the night we went and hammered them mallards.
Yeah, we shot a lot of birds. We shot a lot of birds over them 10 days.
In different spots.
How many?
How many birds do you
think you shot, Tony?
How many did we shoot, all of us? Yeah, I reckon we were getting up towards 100 birds.
Oh, I'd say we shot 24 the first day. The first morning was 24.
Yeah, and we had some teens. To be honest, I stopped counting, which is, look, it's a sign you're shooting well, isn't it, when you stop counting? I know after day one, I'd shot probably as many birds as what I've shot in the last 2 years, getting up there, certainly after day two.
And then you shot a speck. Was that your first speck?
Yeah, shot a speckled. I got snow geese last year, and then I got my first speck and the first Canadian this year. But no snow geese. A bit too early for snow geese.
Two Canadians, right?
Yeah, I got two Canadians over the trip. Yeah, got one on a field hunt, which was good, wasn't it? That was, I mean, we didn't get a lot of action that day, but the action we did get was kind of classic with the geese circling over the blind. We'd got a really nice spot.
We put in so much effort yesterday. Yeah, I think it was yesterday. Because we put out all the snow decoys around like 100. Out at like, hit the field at 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
Really?
Setting up 130 or 140 decoys in the layouts. And had the e-collar going. And we had the whole like crazy cloud above us for a bit. We didn't do as well as we'd hoped, though. We shot a dozen, a Canadian, two specks, and 9 snows.
Wow.
Nice.
Still probably the best field outing we've had was when we had them blinds attached to the bales that time.
Yeah, I know. That was great.
I think we got like 8 or 9 snow geese and a bunch of ducks, too. I haven't been seeing many ducks in the field yet, like we've seen the last couple of years.
There was a good mix last year on that field, weren't there? There was a good mix of geese and duck.
Do you, how many did you get, Johnny? Do you know how many you got? You definitely got a few this year, right?
Yeah, I fucking shot a decoy for sure.
I'm telling you, I was like, I've been sorting out my decoys and I can like fucking, when I'm moving around, you can hear them, you just shake them.
There's something in there.
7 decoys with fucking massive amounts of shots stuck in them. I can't say it was, I mean, I'm sure they've been collecting them for years.
Yeah.
So what was your, what was your favorite part? Johnny, you go first. What was your, out of the 10 days, we did the camping, we did the foothills, we were out right by the mountains. What was your favorite part?
What was your favorite
to eat as well?
I like the Canadian goose. The mallards are amazing. They're just like steaks. I love them. I never thought I'd like, bird like that before, but that was amazing. But the first couple of days, it's just you get thrown into a situation where you're doing a whole bunch of amazing things, and 2 days in, I couldn't remember. Like 3 days in, I can't remember the first day, I can't remember the second day, I can't make sense of anything. We did, the camping was awesome. When Graham showed up, Paul showed up, we had Miles showed up, we were tenting on the island. We were shooting birds on the island. Every day we're going in a different direction, like crisscrossing across Alberta. It was amazing. And I can't even say, like, I really liked where we were into the lowlands. And I mean, it was wild. We're driving around in your truck and I'm getting nervous. I'm like, we're really in the outback here. And then we're in bear country and we're hiking and I'm like everything is so different every day, but we're doing like 2 to 3 different hunts every day. It's a lot to take in. I don't even think my brain is really like kind of recognized everything. I'm still kind of trying to figure out like what the fuck happened, but I had a great time. yeah, like Tony says, I can't wait to get back. Like you said, maybe we'll come back in the spring. I got a bunch of meat in the freezer, and but it's going fast, so I'm kind of thinking like I need to plan on getting back there and kind of doing everything. But like Tony says, it's different every time I get out there. It's different, and we're doing different things, and whatever I thought it would be, it's something completely different. But in the Northern Lights, how about the Northern Lights, everybody? Like yeah, amazing pictures.
They were wild one night, right? When we were driving down that highway.
Yeah, and that at the end of your driveway. I took so many pictures at the end of your driveway. It was ridiculous. Yeah.
What about you, Tony? What's your favorite part?
It's I don't think I can pick a favorite, honestly. There's just so many good moments. But I think there was just a couple of moments when I didn't shoot very well last year. I was a bit disappointed in my shooting, and I shot well this year. And there was just a couple of moments. I can't even remember what day it was. You know, when everything falls into place or you're rolling up at a lake, you're getting everything set up. And it, I don't know, it could be the way the light's coming up. And you're just taking birds, and it's just good fun. There's just the little glimpses was probably my favorite, but it's hard to pick one moment because it is all so good. It's just all great. I think overall it was definitely the bird shooting. Probably that day. Do you know what? If I had to pick a favorite, it would be that day with the mallards, because we still had Paul with us. Graham was there. That was a good moment. We were still camping, I think, at that point. We must have been camping.
Yeah, that's where I think these
yeah, pictures are yeah. taken from,
yeah.
Yeah, because it was good. It was good, you know, to have Miles down, just have all the boys down, getting back to camp. Do you know what? Talking about food, it was the first time I ever ate partridge on this trip. That was good.
Partridge is good, yeah.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah.
So Darren, I just saw a moose. I just saw a moose the like right near my little town here, crossing the road. Pretty big moose. Well, I thought they were like what the prairies and the hills, like they're all over the place, or
yeah, they're, I mean, coast to coast, baby.
How long do you give it before Graham's running out there and shooting that?
And I saw like I saw a coyote out here too, or a wolf as well.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't think he'll be ready to shoot big game for a minute. But ducks are easy to see.
Why don't you think so? See, he's playing. He's doing reverse psychology now. He's like,
no, you're doing reverse psychology now.
You start looking at shooting, you know, deers and moose. This is a lot more
accuracy,
a lot more buck fever, a lot more intense, like excitement you're trying to deal with while you're trying to do all that. You can just blast a duck, man. No one's like, oh my god, a duck's coming! Holy fuck!
Yeah,
but I mean, you shoot at your first deer, and that's what you're doing. I promise you. I first missed my first deer by about 3 feet because I was like, and I remember the buddy I was with because I had been there, sitting there with the scope there for so long on this deer that I was just sitting there eating. That he was like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "I'm just trying to." Get my shit together, man, because my heart's going a fucking mile a minute and you're trying to. And eventually I was just like, well, I gotta fucking either. I think it moved a little bit and I was like, I gotta take this shot. And I took the shot and missed it by a fucking mile. I did end up getting an antelope later that day, but that's like, it's a lot tougher to shoot big game. It's especially like you could do everything right the first time and be right there and you still might just fuck that shit up. You might just like your actual internal state can really fuck that up. Whereas I don't think the internal state really comes into play when you're shooting ducks and especially upland. I mean, it becomes so reactionary, you know, it's just like the upland, you just walk along, the thing jumps up. The instinct is to shoot. And I mean, that's how Dick Cheney shot his buddy in the face, right?
He did shoot his buddy in the face.
And everyone was like, it's a conspiracy. I'm like, I could see how you could shoot your buddy in the face fucking bird hunting. You're all jacked up, and then some birds are flying around at the same time as your buddy comes around the corner, man. He might get shot in the face. That's the only type of hunting that we wear orange for, is over bird hunting, because you're out there creeping around bushes and reactionary shooting. The whole name of the game is fucking when these things bump. Because we don't do where the dogs are pointing at them, and then we're just walking along and the thing spooks. I mean, people tell me you need a dog for this, you need a dog for that. I shot 8 fucking pheasants this year without a dog, and I don't go to any of your bullshit release sites. I don't even agree with the release sites. I think they should just release them. I'm fine with them stocking them up if they want to stock them up, but they should just be dumping them all out into the wild. But, I mean, maybe I take that back. It's better if these fucking doofuses go to the relief site with their fucking dogs and just leave me the fuck alone out in the sticks. But I see it all the time. You need a dog to hunt pheasants. It's like, all right.
I shoot more shit
than anybody I know.
A dog would be handy when them birds fall out in the water.
Yeah. Exactly. That dog would be handy 50 days a year.
Yeah.
But then there's still 325 dogs are still here. Like, I mean, the dogs. Exactly. I got a little tiny dog, and it's a fucking problem half the time. You know, like the cats. I just need someone to stop in here like once every 3-4 days, and the cats are fine. You know, it's like once every 7 days, spend 20 minutes with the cat. And, you know, I went to Egypt, dude, those cats, at that time, I just left them fucking cats. So Miles came and, like, fed him and stuff like that, but he ain't petting the things, or, you know, he's, like, in and out. And I got back, they were a little weird for a few days, but you can't fucking do that kind of shit with a dog, man. You just can't do it. And people get sick of it. They're like, what, for 3 weeks? You only watch your fucking dog for 3 weeks? Nobody wants to do that, man. They can put, some people might. Some people might do it, but nobody's like, oh, fuck, yeah, cool. You know, except in the rare exception, like where Johnny's got like nieces and nephews, I could see where they might get excited to babysit his dog. Maybe there's some kids in play. My dog's old and grumpy. I mean, nobody's like, fuck, yeah. You get barked at and piss on the floor. But you get a big dog now. And now try and find someone to watch your fucking golden retriever. You know, this thing is a legit fucking, you know, nobody wants to watch your fucking golden retriever, buddy. Nobody. Nobody wants to watch your dog. I'm sorry.
Me and my ex-wife had like 3 greyhounds, and we were going on vacation to Jamaica like for a week. It would have cost us more to have the dogs put in a kennel than our all-inclusive vacation. That's what it comes down to.
So
nobody wants to watch those dogs. Nobody's like, yeah, it's not long here, man. They're like,
it's expensive, man.
So you basically, you're telling me I'm still going to be wading next year, aren't you? That's what you're getting at. Stick with the wading.
Oh, yeah, you're still going to be waiting until Jesse gets a dog. I mean, or Miles, but Miles already has a dog. It's not the right kind. It's like too late, you know. He had his dog already. I think it's a husky. Good luck getting a husky. That husky's gonna go grab that fucking duck, and you're never gonna see it again.
We lost the bird in the back of the pickup truck,
dude. I lost a snow goose out of the back of the pickup truck just the other day.
Really?
Yeah. Supposed to be 2. I don't know. I'm assuming a hawk or a falcon.
Or a coyote, maybe?
I don't think a coyote's got the fucking cojones to jump up in the back of my truck, man. That would be like a pretty ballsy coyote. Not to mention the back of my truck is like 6 feet off the ground.
You ever seen the Roadrunner before?
You ever seen the Roadrunner?
Those coyotes are pretty wily.
They'll try some crazy shit.
Not right there. You can imagine what it's like trying to be in the bush with this guy. I mean... Damn, they're pretty good though, other than almost blown away. I mean, that was probably the windiest camping I've ever endured.
Oh my god, we didn't even talk about that. Yeah, I got out of the tent in the middle of the night because I thought you guys were playing a prank on me and taking my tent. I thought you were gonna pull my tent into the other part of the field, and it was just the wind. Nobody was there. I was like, oh my god, it's so windy, I'm gonna get blown away.
It was damn windy.
Yeah,
it was either that or that serial killer that was hanging around.
Dude, was that weird? Still
the campsite.
Yeah, yeah. I had one of those hook lights like hooked up against the ring in the top of the tent, and that fucking thing like fell on my head in the middle of the night. And I remember waking up being like, oh, I mean, I don't know if the tent's going to go over. I don't know what the fuck's going to happen, but I'm fucking going back to sleep. I know that because I was in that little sleeping bag. I was good, man. It didn't matter if the tent blew away or not. I was sweating my bag off in that. I accidentally got the minus 21, and it wasn't anywhere near minus 20.
No, it wasn't. It was windy, though. Me and Tony went to sleep in a big tent, and we woke up in a little tent.
Yeah, fucking thing fell on my. The pole was rubbing.
All right, yours blew the fuck over, right? You guys are on the wayward. Is it the wayward side? The whatever side is.
Yeah, I think we were. We were shielding you.
You were shielding me. My tent has a hole in the back of it, though, so that's good. I just had a tarp stuffed in it. The first night I didn't do anything. It was a huge mistake. Oh, there's me on the duck call. I should have brought my duck calls in. I got all new duck calls. Not all new, but three new ones. Mine broke. My old reliable duck call fucking broke on me. I think that was after you guys left, right? We were really? Out and it was like -7 in the morning. And they just like clacked together and fucking broke. So. Gotta be careful with that, I guess. Something to watch, but it was my good old faithful duck call.
Damn. Are you guys gonna do this again then, or what's going? What's the plan?
Probably.
I'm in for the long haul.
I think Tony's an annual. Regardless, you know, Tony and Johnny have kind of earned their stripes. It's just sort of they're just gonna come out and do it, and then we'll sort of decide if and how we're gonna monetize it. Because it would be like, I mean, and I don't just mean that by monetize, but also just get other people involved, you know, because technically we don't need to monetize it. We really don't. I mean, we can just do that. It costs us almost nothing. You know what I mean? We camped and stayed at my house the whole time. We could do that every year for 2 weeks for the cost of flights almost. I mean, we got to get some food in the beginning, but usually by like day three, we're rolling on our fucking... on our own meat, so
yeah, we didn't buy much food. We didn't buy much food.
Yeah, we didn't buy much food, except in the very beginning. So, I could see a thing. I could foresee a thing where maybe you guys come out for 2 weeks, and we, you know, run maybe a group in the middle or a couple smaller groups. I think 10 days is a bit much for most people. I mean, honestly. Most people just couldn't honestly have kept up with the pace. There's a lot of people that could not have kept up with the pace we were doing.
Yeah, it's just interesting how you guys were able to do so many different types. I mean, you had what? You did the field. You did the field.
And we didn't even get into sheep. Yeah, there was still some stuff we didn't do. Yeah.
But yeah, we're right near the lowlands with the bighorn sheep and that. But our original plan was kind of do 2 weekends. And it kind of just kind of morphed into kind of let's just do the whole thing and see how that works out. But we could go back to that. Like if anybody else wants to come out, do a weekend, do another weekend.
That's a good idea.
Every day we can do like 3 different things. Right, like it's just crazy.
Yeah. You could do the weekends for people that can't take a lot of time off. Yeah. Like you can do 2 weekends and then have a little one in between with, maybe just you guys or maybe somebody else that wants to come, or you could do a bunch of different ways. You could do the water, the ducks in the water, the field, the lowlands, the moose. But I mean,
there can't be that many places around the world where you can do 3 different types of hunting in a day. It's just such a perfect location.
Dude, I got permission in so many fields since you left. I've just been collecting them. All the Hutterites are like, they're just like, fucking kill the geese, buddy. Kill them all. That's what they all said to these like peace loving fucking Hutterites. So I call them up. I'm like, can I hunt some geese? They're like, kill them all. Kill them all. I mean, like a real bloodthirstiness to it. I was like, fucking wow. So I'm talking 3 different Hutterite colonies, a John and 2 Peters. John and 2 Peters. And all the exact same response. Kill them all. Kill all the geese. I guess they don't like the geese out there shitting in the field.
I don't think it's good fertilizer.
And then you got the coolies right there too, right? I mean, that's where we shot. That's where we had that whole experience with Miles shooting that thing. And that was only like, that was right around where we were. Wasn't that close to the ducks too? That
dude, one. I shot the two deer I shot a couple weeks ago, probably 2 weeks ago now. I shot the two in the one day. And that was literally, so you know where we drove by where that fucking inlet, where the big inlet with the whirlpool was?
Yeah.
If we had just turned right there and went down the road, it was maybe 300 yards from, maybe 500 yards from there. But there's a road that goes right down the side, so we could drive right down. You guys seen the video, I think, right? Of me pulling it out with the rope. That's probably the biggest mule deer I shot.
It looks good size.
He was a big boy. Dude, I went up to it, and he was still there. His head popped up, so I had to blast him again. Popped him in the head. Blew his fucking eye out and his brains.
Jesus Christ.
I went up there, and I started feeling, because I couldn't find the exit wound, but I could see where there was some fur disturbed. You know, it gets pretty easy to see where the fur is fucked up. So I went and field there, and you could feel a big fucking lump. And that was a bullet. So I pulled the bullet out of it.
Wow.
Yeah. So I got the bullet out of a deer and an elk so far this year. Retrieved the bullet. So I saw three total. I think I've retrieved three total bullets since I started hunting.
Just as a little teaser, this is the campsite. This is the campsite we're at. I mean, we had this all to ourselves right on the edge of this lake. You can just walk into the lake there if you want. We started the hunting on this island on the right side of that lake. But I mean, this is where it was. Pretty, pretty cool place.
Yeah. So what are you guys thinking next year? What month do you think it's like?
Around about now, right now, this end of October, beginning of November.
October, first week of November. I'm not doing any more events in November.
You might as well wait for the snow geese, right, Darren?
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice, because that's the only thing we were missing was the huge flocks of snow geese.
Can you still get mallards and snow geese together?
Yeah, everything. Yeah, right now. I mean, this year's a little weird. The only concern you run with fucking shooting up the last week of October is there has been years where everything's frozen.
Oh yeah, right.
2 years ago.
Two years ago or last year, only
hunting the river.
That first year I came out, it was like that. We're on the river.
Yeah, we didn't even get out to the fields, right? Because most of the birds were already gone. So you could sometimes it could be in November, and I mean that's the problem with the birds. It's always a risk, or it could still be fucking 25 degrees out and there's no birds to be found because they're not even, like, I mean, right now I'm still saying most of the ducks haven't even got here yet.
When does the Army base elk hunt start every year?
I don't know. There's a couple in November, and I think one in January, maybe.
Right,
I
might can piggyback it around that, but that feels like a winter, more of a wintry thing, really.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that, although I'd be curious to get the guy's opinion on this. Johnny hasn't done it, but Tony has. But I would guess that you probably much prefer when we don't have to deal with Army personnel and all that sort of stuff, and we get to just sort of do our own thing.
Definitely prefer doing our own thing. It'd be a real ball ache now having to go through that whole process back at the base. But at the same time,
the orientation every day too. It's every day.
But you know what though? That's just some prime elk country, isn't it? That's the thing. It's I think it's worth sitting through that orientation daily to get out there with that number of elk, because that was something special. That was amazing.
And my most amazing experience, because I haven't been out very often, but the time I was out, which you weren't there, Tony, that time, but is we did a similar thing where we saw a bunch of bull elk, I think, right, Darren? Were those the ones with the horns at the bull? Bull elk with the horns?
That's a bull, yeah. A bull when it's an elk.
With the rack or whatever. So, and we saw them way, way up. Like, so then we drove the trucks around, like way, way around, right? And then all the way back in, and then we walked like a mile or two in this way. Can't see my hand, but came back this way And I found this like quartz crystal on top of the hill. I was like, this is really weird. And we were spreading, sort of starting to spread out.
It's and then Grab's looking for crystals.
And then we see, like, literally probably 200 yards away, 100 yards away, I see all these antlers come up, and like 12 of these massive elk just start walking up the hill towards us, right at us. It was the craziest. And we're all like, oh my God, they're right there. All 12 of them came up. It was the most majestic thing I've ever seen. And then Darren and them sort of started to envelop them, and they missed. And I was kind of happy. I was like, oh good. They got away. All 12 of them got away.
And you got your crystal.
I was going to be like, run.
So it grabs some fucking liability out in the field. You know,
like an anti-hunt saboteur.
Yeah. That's it. So what about you, Johnny? Are you thinking 2 weeks? Is it a 2-week fucking hunting adventure for you?
Yeah, well, like last year was a little bit later, and it did get a little bit chilly. This year was almost like before the birds a little bit, and really warm. So I would be thinking like right around now, but like you say, you never know, right? Because it could be early and be super, you never know. But maybe I could do 2 weeks. Fuck it.
There's always the river. I mean, the last week, 2 weeks of October would probably be a safe bet.
You know, 2 weeks, you would hit everything. You would hit everything.
Yeah, well, we'll chat offline and we'll see if we can run a couple little groups of Yahoos through there, see if anyone's interested in just coming out for 3 days and shooting some geese.
Yeah.
And people should do it. People should get on board with this.
Because, yeah, I mean, Tony, is this your third year? You just sort of slipped into it accidentally. How did that happen again? You were just coming, right?
Well, I met up with you at Heathrow, didn't it, for the first time when you was on your way to Egypt. And we just
started. You brought us the pot pie. And we got
that's right, yeah. Yeah, the pot pie. And that's where the story began. but me and you sat there, sat at the bar talking about hunting. And you messaged me out of the blue, I don't know, a few months later, and just kind of invited me to come out. And so I came.
Had you already bought the ticket for the CAC?
No, I think what it was, we were talking about CAC, and I was like, look, man, it's a long way to come for 3 or 4 days. And you was just like, well, come earlier, we'll go hunting. Come a week earlier. That's what we did. So that kind of 3-4 day CAC trip turned into a 2-week trip as the first year I came. And yeah, it's like the hunting was almost like a sideshow, but I fell in love with it. I fell in love with it. It probably took me a long while to process, like Johnny was saying, to process what I went through on that first year, because it was just so far away from anything I'd ever done. And since that day, I spend a lot of my time looking forward to the next trip, knowing that there's going to be another trip the following year, you know, and I did train to get in better shape for this year. It's just so many positives to coming out. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, this is an annual trip for me now, and it's a long way off. I have to wait a long time, but I don't know. I've just done 10 days straight hunting. I'm pretty sure there's probably quite a number of Canadian hunters out there that probably get a similar amount of days in throughout a season. You know, with work and only being able to go weekends and stuff. So if I can get 10 days a year, I'm grateful. I'm happy with that.
If you get antsy, there's always that spring snow goose. Spring snow goose and spring bear.
Yeah. Hey, the possibilities are endless.
Boom. It was a time. It's going to be a time. We'll figure out some dates next year and see if we can't get some other people involved in at least the waterfowl aspect of it. That is sort of the funnest. The big game hunting is fun. It'd be fun for us to go out and do that as a group, but to get other people involved, that is a little trickier. It's harder to get everyone to shut the fuck up. And I mean, it is better when you get to pack the meat out. I'm not gonna lie, it's a better experience when there's a bunch of guys there for that. And it's a lot more watching, unless you guys get some tags. Whereas the waterfowl, we're in the blind, we're laughing, we're joking. Oh, the ducks are coming, shut the fuck up. Then we shoot some ducks, and then we fucking get back at laughing and fucking.
It is fun. It is fun.
Got the first banded duck while you guys are here, too.
Yeah.
It's on my lanyard now, on my call lanyard. Are you getting better with your call, Tony? You know, that's a wood call, so you got to be pretty light on it. You can't really hammer it.
I've been annoying the shit out of the kids and the missus since I got back. I even sent Johnny a message just quacking it.
It sounded just like Darren.
if you need a Christmas present, you got to get yourself a nice acrylic one that you could really hammer on out on the lake.
Yeah.
You know, what's a weird aspect that I didn't understand about the whole duck hunting part was that it's hard to imagine that, like, you guys can be out there taking all the shots and then literally like seconds later, more are coming in. Like, I always thought that would scatter and then that would sort of empty the place out and like they wouldn't come back for a long time. But it was weird how it was a continuous thing. Like, you're shooting not that far away, there's ducks and they don't really seem to get spooked, or they still have a chance of coming around right in front of you. It's so that was what was weird to me, is that it was easy for it to refill constantly. Like, once you're hidden, once you're in there, because obviously you know, and then the other thing is you can't really hunt while you're going in. You got to go in, find your spot, and then wait for them to come to you, right? You can't really just go and spook them and shoot them.
That works once in a blue moon, but not the success rate on that is low, despite what you would think. But
there was a couple times where they were coming in hot and heavy, like that first evening.
Wait till we get you out there one time, and we'll get you in a lay down when the fucking snow geese are swirling overhead. Because these boys have both experienced that. When there's literally, like, we didn't have a good shoot 'em up. I think we ended up all right, maybe 15 or 20 geese and ducks mixed up. But you literally got like thousands of geese just fucking swirling. And you're waiting because they don't come in like the ducks, where the ducks are just coming in. The snow geese do this big thing where they just start swirling you. So there's just a huge tornado of geese, and all you can hear is as there's just like thousands of geese above you, and they just slowly start to descend. I mean, we could have jumped out and probably shot like 15 geese. However many bullets we had, we could have probably jumped out and shot that many geese, but we were hoping to let a bunch of them land. We were like, we're going to let a bunch of them land, and they never did. I think they seen Brandon trying to videotape it.
He did.
Out of the blind, because there's a video where Brandon's filming it, and you can see this bird comes by about 2 feet off the ground and like looks over
at
the camera. And then his tone, he goes from saying one sound to saying another sound, and then all of a sudden all these... I think we did in the end jump up and blast a couple. That was the one where the snow goose almost hit Brandon. It he moved over and it actually hit the pole of the blind and fucking bent it like that. So, I mean, it's no joke getting hammered with them. But we can get you out in the field, because it's the same thing with the geese. They don't really know what the fuck's going on. And then they start to split up and I was looking at a post on Facebook the other day about 2 hours from here, 2 hours north of here, where they shot 350 fucking snow geese in one morning.
I think the other thing is that blew me away was how fast the ducks cruise in. Like they seem to just cruise in like out of nowhere. They come out of nowhere. They're all of a sudden, it's just like, whoosh, they're coming just scooting right by it. Like,
some of them, when they catch the wind, right, they sound like missiles. They do sound like missiles, don't they? Just shooting through.
And when other ones catch the wind, right, they're just stuck right there. I mean, you have other times, because you were out. I mean, we had the I would guess the example of that would have been when we were out for that night hunt there, where they were like coming in from the side and then getting almost hung up right in front of you when they turn into the wind to land. But
yeah.
I mean, like those geese get stuck in the field, man. And they're just like, it's windy. And they're like, they've almost committed to landing. And then they see you pop up with your gun and you can see them. They're just like, they want to get going, but the wind's fucking hammering them. And they're just like almost in suspended animation sometimes. I mean, sometimes they literally they're flapping, but they're fucking not going anywhere because the wind picks up, so you can get them either moving real quick, but ideally they're moving not too quick. I mean, it's fun shooting even ducks.
that's the beauty of it, isn't it? You know, when you just get that moment, it's like that first day we went out with the sun coming up behind us, and we didn't even have blinds, and we were just blast that first morning, and we were blasting. We got our limit real quick, and it's the sun's in the right place, the wind's in the right direction. You just get that sweet spot, and it's just great. It's just amazing, and that's the kind of perfect moments with it.
Yeah, it's like Christmas. I always say it's like Christmas. Every duck hunt's like Christmas morning for an adult. It's like you never know what you're going to get. Could be disappointing, but you could still just get the biggest flock yet. You could just get fucking...
And like Graham says, like they come out of nowhere, and when they start coming, it's just crazy. And it doesn't happen every time, but every couple of times it tends to happen, and it's just, it's crazy. It's pretty amazing.
Did you get your pal yet?
No, it's stuck in the mail, apparently. I still don't have my pal yet. It's crazy. I'm going to call the girl at the office, but she's just going to tell me it's probably sent out. But yeah, it's stuck in the mail.
I didn't want to let you down, but I remember when you said, I might have my pal by the time I get out there. I was like, well, when'd you send it off? And you told me, I was like, all right, cool. But I was thinking, yeah, fuck you. Good luck, buddy.
Yeah. No, I would have had it if it wasn't for the postal strike. But because they got 28 days, they got to send it out, right? But
yeah, they say that. I think 28
days. They say that?
Yeah, they're not. I don't think you can trust them on that.
No, okay.
No fucking way. I know some people waited 10 months for their renewal.
Okay. Well, all right.
So you're waiting to go. You're waiting to go shotgun shopping.
Yeah, yeah, hallway gun for birds.
Nice. When are you going to go?
As soon as I get my pal, bro.
You going? Yeah, right away. Do you know what you're going to get?
No. I got some ideas. I'm going to get a .22, and I got a rifle range really close to me that's kind of cool, like short range, for good for .22s. I'm just going to get proficient on a .22 and go from there. And buy a shotgun.
Shotgun's a must have.
Yeah.
It's a must have fucking tool for sure. I guess, Tony, tougher for you to get one. You could get your pal, I guess, but it seems kind of pointless.
As you know what? I've got a slight stumble. Well, I could get a pal, but the stumbling block is I've got to do that in-person gun safety course in Canada first. So maybe
okay, yeah. So it's easy to do. We could pretty much just book it for a day when you're
one day thing.
4 hours, yeah. Maybe, or 6 hours. If you get a good guy, maybe 3. If you get a dork, 6.
Yeah, well,
mine was 2 days.
And yours was two. Day?
2 days, yeah.
And you didn't even get a restricted?
No.
Huh. 2 days of missed hunting.
It was 3 days for the restricted.
2 days of missed hunting is hurting.
That's not good. We'll figure it out.
I should become a pal trainer.
Yeah, you do it in about an hour. Yeah.
Extra $200 and we could be done this thing well before lunch, boys. Anyway. Guys are coming back next year. Any messages for anyone out there? I mean, we appreciate all the support from you guys too. You guys are both lords of Grimerica, so thanks for that. And what do you got to say to people who are maybe thinking, "Nah, that sounds cool," but you know, all these people say it sounds cool, they never fucking come through.
Yeah.
Well, do you know my message to people, especially Canadians listening? Just get yourself there, especially for the fowl, right? It's easy. It's easy to get your powers as a Canadian. It's easy to buy shotguns. I'm coming from a country where this is really difficult and really elitist. It's available to you. It's really easy. You're going to be broken in nice and gently with Darren. He's going to show you the right, and you're going to be shooting birds yourself really quickly. I mean, I've learned so much in the short time I've been. I've probably racked up like, what, 20, 25 days hunting, maybe not even that. And if I lived there, I could be out shooting my own birds. It's not a great investment. But you've got the opportunity to do it in Canada, and you've got the great, great bird shooting there. Just do it. Just get your ass there and do it. It's so easy. Just get it done.
It's worth it just to see the birds.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really is a once in a lifetime thing to see. There's so many people that live close to it that'll never understand what a fucking flock of 50,000 geese looks like.
Or what a partridge tastes like.
What a partridge tastes like. I mean, some people would say it tastes gamey, Tony. This shit is gamey.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Or what a Canadian goose feels like.
Johnny, you've looked like you've been hammering into the wild meat lately. So how is that adjusting to you? Any gaminess?
None. No, it's great. I can't even tell like what's like the bird is so good. It tastes like the like you labeled some things. I got some things that I didn't have. I got a couple of things like it'll be like round steaks. I have no idea what it is. Sometimes I think it's bird or it's steak, but it's bird because the bird is so good. It's just crazy. I've only got one or two pellets so far, so I'm getting good at like making sure. But no, it's really clean and amazing. I got a couple of steaks that I don't know what they are, but I cook them up and I just thank Darren and Graham and Tony and everybody that allowed me to end up getting to this point to be able to go out there a couple of times. When I drove out to Invermere with my wiener dog in my RV, and I thought like, oh, this is getting tough, and it's a bunch of days in, and I'm feeling pretty tired. And then I was like, I ran out of podcasts, all the podcasts I listened to, and then Apple CarPlay all of a sudden popped up like Grimerica, and I'm like, oh. And then it was Tony on Grimerica, like talking to me through my car stereo, and it was awesome. It was an amazing thing, and him talking about the elk hunt, and I didn't even know at the time I would be doing anything like this, and here I am waiting for my pal. Maybe shot a few birds, maybe a decoy or two. Who knows, right? Nobody knows for sure, but I got all this meat. My plan was I'm coming home with a bunch of meat, and I came home with like 60 pounds of meat, and I couldn't be happier, and I'm not buying nothing for a while, and if anybody needs tips on trying to get meat in an airplane, and so I figured all that out. And I want to say hi to Nick and Trev Dog. And Trev Dog, I know what you went through when you went through the swamp. I know Graham knows what I'm talking about when you went through the lake with the hip waders on. I had a moment. Graham knows what I'm talking about. It's tough, man.
Are still on that fucking island because Graham couldn't get his ass across the fucking channel.
You shouldn't have given me waders that are too big. They're slipping off my feet.
Well, I was
Tony was there. Thank God Tony made it.
At one point, I thought you'd gone under the water, Graham. I thought I'd lost you.
I fell down three times. I fell in the water three times. I was holding my phone up and trying to...
It's not easy. It's not easy. Everything's hard.
I had to get up off my ass with both my hands out of the water. Like, that's good core strength, right?
You must have got wet.
No, I was wearing the waders came up to my my underarm. I was able to keep my underarm. I was like falling down like that. I think I'm pull myself back up.
We better keep you away from the river. We might lose you. I mean, the cross into the island can be treacherous.
But the best part is just getting to know all you guys, like Trevor, Nick, and Paul, and you guys. Yeah, it's awesome. That's one of the best parts about the show and about all this stuff is just meeting some awesome friends for life, you know.
It was great when everybody was camping. It was great. I had such a good time. And I love your jersey, Graham. I love your jersey.
Another shot, UK.
Yeah, somehow. Somehow this guy ends up catching you because he's got a passport too. I mean, he better watch it. You better stay the fuck out of the UK, Graham, because you're allowed to get arrested for something.
I got my citizenship. Yeah,
that means just fair game. They come get you.
They come all the way over here and knock on my door.
Yeah. Hey, bloke, you got to knock it off. Anyway. We should probably wrap it up. People, we'll figure out some dates for next year and get some links up. But for now, you can email me or Graham if it's something you think you're interested in for next year. It's going to be small groups. I'm thinking, you know, three or four sort of max. Keep it small. Keep it tight. It gets hard to do many more people than that, right? Kind of nine guys in a field trying to hide from birds.
Yeah, let us know if you're interested. We'll keep a list of people.
Keep a list of people that don't seem too crazy to trust with fucking pump shotguns. Because, you know, there's that too. Anyway, we appreciate you guys coming on the show. Anything to pump or, you know, anything before we let you go?
Nah, just say thanks again for a great trip. Thanks to all the boys for coming out. You're right, the people I've met, fantastic blokes. Just, yeah, have a great time. Jesse, Miles, Paul, Nick, Trev, all the people I've met, all my mates out there in Canada. It feels special to fly all that way and be greeted with a good bunch of friends. So thank you.
Yeah, Paul back east will make it next time, I bet.
He's flying out tomorrow too. I'll take that bet.
Yeah, just like Tony says, Miles, Jesse, Paul, Trev, Nick. Look, I'm on TV. Is there fireworks going on behind?
Yeah,
me?
Yeah.
What's going on? Is that in my house or is that something that's going on? The fuck? Did I do it from this?
It might have been that. Yeah.
Ah, yeah. Look at this. I'm magic.
Wow.
Don't ever invite me back.
French people.
Well, boys.
Yeah.
We appreciate you coming out. We appreciate you both supporting the show. We appreciate meeting you guys and having you guys as friends now. So it's been quite a journey. And I'm looking forward to, I guess, 11 months from now.
Counting down.
Like 320 more sleeps.
I love you guys.
Yeah, you too, buddy. We appreciate it. We want people to support the show. Of course, GoAmerica.ca/support. Check out the podcast, GoAmerica Outlawed. .ca, adultbrain.ca for audiobooks, contact at thecabin.com for trips and events, spam Graham or myself if you're interested in coming hunting with us next time. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Somehow I built a rocket ship out of the stuff dreams are made and popsicle sticks. Please look at my rocket ship schematics. Tell me it can fly to the moon. Tell me I'm not a lunatic. I bet, I bet, I bet, I bet, I bet. Space cadet. I bet, I bet, I bet you think, I bet you think I'm a space cadet. No regret, I do not fret, 'cause I am a space cadet. In my hands I have a gas can and matchsticks. Yes, Earth is my home, but I need a vacation from all the sadness, the chaos, and dramatics. I'll let you do the countdown, 3, 2, 1, no hesitation. I bet, I bet, I bet, I bet, I bet. Space cadet. I bet, I bet, I bet, I bet, I bet you think I'm a space cadet. I bet, I bet, I bet you think, I bet you think I'm a space cadet. No regret, I do not fret, 'cause I am a space cadet. Thank you.